Hi, I'm Sam Edis.
And I'm Amy Nelson. Welcome to What's Her Story with Sam and Amy.
This is a show about the world's most remarkable women, their professional and personal journeys.
Together, we'll hear from gold medalists, best-selling authors, and leaders of the world's most iconic brands. She was called a hero by Oprah Winfrey. She has two prosthetic legs. She's a Paralympic snowboarder, and she was the runner-up on season 18 of Dancing with the Stars. Today, we welcome Amy Purdy to the show.
Amy was such an incredible guest that we decided to split this into two episodes. So today we share with you part one of this inspiring conversation. So Amy, tell us about your childhood in Las Vegas.
Gosh, I mean, you know, growing up in Las Vegas is interesting. It's one of those places where people always say, wait, you were born and raised in Las Vegas? Like, how many people are actually born in Las Vegas? But I'm one of them. And I always dreamed of getting out of there, to be honest. I felt like it just wasn't where I wanted to be. I loved the outdoors. I loved the mountains. I knew there was a whole world out there. In fact, my aunt, she lived in Australia, and I remember she'd come back and tell us all these stories of her travels, and like that was the only bit of information I had, really, that there was this whole outside world. And so I really visualized, like, and daydreamed, right? Just traveling the world and seeing what's out there. And Vegas felt so boring, but my family, you know, we did everything we could to be in the outdoors, and I think that's where my love for the outdoors came. My family would go up camping on the weekends. We had a family cabin up in the mountains that we would go up to on the weekends in the summer, and then we would ski on the weekends in the winter. Although I was never very good at skiing, it just was something my family did for fun. And we weren't really into sports. I mean, I definitely do not come from a big sport family. In Vegas, at the time, we didn't have a sport team. So it's not something that we really grew up around. I never played sports. I did clog dancing when I was 12 years old with my sister. That's about the most athletic thing I did. And then I fell in love with snowboarding, though, at the age of 14. And that wasn't really a sport. It was more of a lifestyle. Like when you think about skateboarding and like a skateboarder, you know, that's what the snowboarders were like at that time too, where it was just like, this isn't like I'm training for a sport. It's like, this is just kind of what I do. And so I was introduced to it, actually not at 14, at 15, fell in love with it. And, you know, even then, definitely did not consider myself an athlete. So that's one thing I want to say is a lot of people just assume that, you know, if you're an athlete, you were born an athlete, you were born into an athletic family, or you've always been an athlete. I did not become an athlete until I was 30 years old.
I would love it if you would share with us your post-college plans, because your parents did not have an expectation that you would necessarily go to college.
There was no college plan, and I didn't go to college because I didn't know what I wanted to do yet. I definitely knew what I didn't want. I didn't want to stay in Las Vegas. I didn't want to, you know, I had a lot of friends who were either going to college, they knew what they wanted to do, you know, or they were going to go to the community school and figure out what they were going to do, or, you know, they were going to work at the bank or work at a clothing store. And that felt like death to me. Like I thought, I can't. It just gave me the Sundays to think about like that's what I was going to do after high school. But yeah, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I ended up meeting this girl who is about my age. She was maybe 20 years old. I was actually 18, but I was snowboarding in Utah, and I was out to lunch with my mom and my dad, and she was our waitress. And she, we started talking, and she's like, oh, I'm getting ready to quit because I'm moving to Salt Lake City. And we were like, oh, what are you going to do there? And she said, well, I'm doing this massage school. And she's like, it's really cool. This is what it's all about. And that was the first time that I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to do that too. And she ended up becoming my roommate. I signed up that day for massage to be a massage therapist. We got a place in Salt Lake City, Utah. And the day after I graduated high school, I moved there and started my journey of becoming a massage therapist.
And then When you were 19, everything changed overnight.
And then all the plans that I had really, you know, even though my plans were loose, right? I visualized myself traveling the world. Now I had this job that would travel with me. And I thought that I knew where my life was going. You know, you really, I don't know, I guess when you're young, you really feel like you just know how things are going to work out, you know, and you're on a good path and life is good and, you know, the world's your oyster. And that's really how I felt, especially doing massage. I loved my job. I loved it. And I was helping to heal people. I was making really, really good money for being 19 years old. So I was just saving money. And I was saving it so that I could travel the world, and then I'd have this job that would travel with me. I wanted to live in ski resorts all across the world. And then suddenly, my life took a detour. I went to work one day, so I started working. I went back to Las Vegas after Salt Lake to work at this world-class spa there. It's called Canyon Ranch. And I was so excited to be working there. I was the youngest massage therapist. And so I went in feeling good, just as usual. And about half of my way through my day, so about three massages in, I realized that I was exhausted. And at first, I kind of blamed it on the person I was massaging, because I thought, you know, sometimes people can like give you energy. Sometimes people just suck the life out of you. I really was like, gosh, like, what's going on with this guy? Like, he's draining my energy. But over the next hour or so, I realized that my energy level continued to fade, and I just realized I was very fatigued. And my back was a little bit achy, my neck was a little bit achy. So thinking I had the flu, I went home from work early. My temperature that night was 101, which is typical flu-like symptoms. That's not bad, right? Next morning, my temperature broke. Seeing that I felt better, my family decided to follow through with their travel plans and go out of town. And I said, don't worry about me. I probably have a 24-hour flu or something. But that afternoon, instead of feeling better, I started to feel worse. And I remember my mom calling me to check on me. And I said, Mom, I feel like I'm dying. But, you know, you always feel like you're dying when you have a flu or you have a cold. I didn't actually think I was dying. I just felt so, so sick. And my mom said, well, you probably have a 24-hour flu. You probably are a little dehydrated. You know, go to the emergency room if you need to. And I got off the phone with her and I closed my eyes and fell asleep. And I fell into the deepest sleep I have ever felt. In fact, I tried to wake myself up multiple times and I couldn't. I was forcing my eyes awake and I could not wake up. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, I heard this voice say, Amy, get up and look in the mirror. And this voice was so startling that I instantly opened my eyes. I looked around. I didn't see anybody there. And that's when I started to realize just how sick I was. I tried to get into a seated position and I was weak and I was shaky. My heart was beating out of my chest. It was racing. I scooted to the edge of the bed and I put my feet on the floor and I stood up and I realized that I couldn't feel my feet. I looked to the floor and my feet were purple, and I looked at my hands and my hands were purple, and I looked at my reflection in the mirror and my nose, my chin, and my cheeks were purple as well. So I knew right in that moment that I was dying and something was seriously wrong. And so my cousin happened to walk in right at that moment because my mom had called her to come check on me. And she took one look at me and she cried, Amy, it looks like you're dead. And I said, I'm dying. I know I am. I have to get to the hospital right now. So she rushed me to the hospital and I was immediately put on life support. I was given less than a 2% chance of living. They called my parents and said I maybe had 2 hours left to live. They knew I was in septic shock, but they didn't know why. They didn't know what I had yet. And my blood pressure had crashed. My heart rate was through the roof. You know, everything that they look for when seeing if somebody's going to make it through this. And so they told my parents, you know, she maybe has 2 hours left to live. We don't know what your daughter has, but get here right now. My parents were about 5 hours away. So they jumped in the car. My dad actually ripped the handle off his truck, getting into his truck that fast. And they rushed to Vegas, and I made it through the night. It took about 5 days to figure out that what I had was actually something called meningococcal meningitis, which is bacterial meningitis. it's rare to get, and it's incredibly deadly. And we really don't know how I got it. It spread like the flu or the cold. Somebody could have sneezed on me in the elevator at work, and maybe that's how I got it. But due to this little microscopic bacteria, over the course of 2.5 months, I lost my spleen, I lost my kidney function, I lost the hearing in my left ear, and then due to the septic shock that my body went into, I lost both my legs below the knees. So my life dramatically changed overnight, and I had to completely, you know, figure out a new place in the world and how I was going to come back into the world and where I belonged in the world. And I ended up having to kind of create it for myself.
That reaction that you had to the most horrific trauma anyone can really ever envision for their own body, for their own life, and at such a young age, what was so unusual was your reaction and your determination. And your sister's wedding was just a couple months later, and she offered to postpone it, and you said, no, we're going to have that wedding. And you surprised her by walking down the aisle, which defied all odds. Now, what's so interesting is that now you've parlayed that into a career where you motivate other people to defy the odds in their own lives. What is it about you that enabled you to do that and still does today?
You know, I do think that I, first of all, have been my whole life very goal-oriented, where I need something. I need something to look forward to. Even when times are bad, I'll create something for myself to just keep moving forward. And I realize now, looking back, my mission in life has always been to find a way, to walk again, to find a way to snowboard again, you know, whatever it may be, to figure out the possibilities. And the first thing that I know helped me get through what I went through was I was very grateful to be alive. Even though I lost my legs, it puts everything into perspective, because I almost lost my hands as well. My hands were actually at one point worse than my legs. And so when I only lost my legs, I felt lucky. And I felt like, okay, things could have been so much worse. Thank God, I actually pulled out of this good. I only lost my legs, my kidneys, my spleen, and my hearing in my left ear. Like, thank God, I'm good. And so it's amazing how life does that, right? Like, you need perspective. To some people, that would be the worst thing in the world. But I knew that things could be so much worse. I was that close to death. I had a near-death experience. I flatlined on the operating room table at one point. I had, you know, heart shockers shock my heart back into rhythm. There was multiple times over the first few weeks that I died or was very close to, and where my family had to say goodbye. So to actually survive that, I felt so grateful. And then to know that things could have been worse. I mean, people who go through what I went through oftentimes lose their legs above the knees, oftentimes are scarred from head to toe because of the septic shock. It gives you this rash, and I didn't have the rash, so I got very lucky to not be scarred from head to toe. I got so lucky to save my hands and my fingers. So I just kind of naturally at that time felt grateful. I didn't have to force myself. I really felt grateful for what I had. And I then also had to kind of figure out what does this mean for my future? And I try to visualize my future, and I had no idea what that looked like. Okay, I'm a snowboarder, a massage therapist, I painted, and now can I do those things again? Am I going to be able to snowboard again? Am I going to be able to work on my feet all day as a massage therapist? Am I going to be able to travel? Like, you know, what does my life look like now? And that's what really prompted me to set these goals for myself to help pull myself through this. So I remember being wheeled into the operating room and being terrified. They were getting ready to amputate both of my legs below the knees. And I had no idea what to expect. I had never seen anybody with two prosthetic legs before in my life, let alone someone young and, you know, someone... Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. And And I was so scared. And I thought, okay, I'm going to give myself three things that I'm going to work on when I get out of this operation. And the first was that I wasn't going to be a victim. And the reason that hit me is everybody felt so sad because of what I was going through. My family, my friends, it was heartbreaking. And it didn't feel good. It didn't feel good to have people feel sorry for me. And I wanted to be able to show them I'm going to be okay. It's going to be fine. And so I thought, I am not a victim. I am going to figure my way through this. I'm going to take this and I'm going to use it somehow. And so then the second goal was that I would somehow help other people on this journey. Didn't know what that meant, but I thought, when I figure this out, I want to help others do the same. And the third thing was I wanted to snowboard that year because I had never missed a season of snowboarding before, and I wasn't about to. So I was like, okay, whatever it takes, I'm going to try to figure out a way to snowboard this year. I'll get my prosthetics and we'll figure this out. And so that's what I went into the operating room with, and that's kind of the goals that I held, you know, true to my heart and what I kind of moved towards as I got out of the hospital. And it gave me something to hang on to, right? Kind of pulled me into the future a little bit and helped me not look backwards at how things were. You know, I was now like, well, this is where it's at, and now I just got to pick up pieces and move forward and figure this out. So walking to my sister's wedding, I think, was just kind of an extension of that, where first of all, I didn't want to be a victim, right? I did not want people to feel sorry for me. And my sister's wedding was right. It was, so I believe I left the hospital, or I had my legs amputated. I think it was August 21st. And my sister was supposed to get married, you know, just a few days later. She actually pushed the wedding into September, but it really didn't give me much time to prepare. And I didn't want people to feel sorry for me because our whole family, all our friends, you know, that was right out of high school. So you've got a lot of friends at that time, right? It's kind of like all our high school friends are there. There was going to be hundreds of people there. And I just didn't want people feeling sorry for me. I just thought, I don't want to be wheeled down the aisle, because I was my sister's maid of honor. I'm like, I don't want to be wheeled down the aisle and have everybody feel sorry for me. So I decided I'm going to walk in her wedding. I'm going to make this happen. And I went and got my prosthetics made. First of all, you know, massively one of the most challenging probably few days of my life, because the reality of how hard my life was going to be kind of hit me at that point that, oh, you don't just get legs and go. These hurt. They don't fit. Your body's not made to stand confined in carbon fiber. It was incredibly overwhelming to think of what my life was going to be like. In fact, my mom and I crawled into bed and didn't get out for days because we were so overwhelmed. Like, okay, now all this vision of, oh, I'm going to do these things. Now I'm going to realize just how hard all of this really is to do again. However, I thought, well, okay, I'm going to walk in my sister's wedding. I'll just start there. So I started working with a physical therapist for the week. I, you know, got my legs worked on a few times, and I ended up walking down the aisle in her wedding, surprising her. She didn't even realize that I was, you know, working towards that. In fact, they wheeled me to the door before walking outside, and then I got up and walked. And oh, it makes me want to cry. I actually haven't thought about it in so long, but everybody was crying, right? Like, everybody was bawling. And for me, I felt like, okay, if I can do this, it's going to be okay. You know, if I could take one step forward, eventually I'll get there. Just keep moving forward. So for me, it was a really great little goal example of what the possibilities are. And then I just needed to make them bigger.
Do you still live your life that way? In this idea of like, sorry, I'm going to cry too.
We're all crying, I think.
I know. But do you still live your life that way? And what I take away from what you say is this really amazing idea of like, as long as we can hold on to one goal, to one small goal, to something.
I do, because life, as it continues on, you deal with more challenges. you know, and just because you've lived one story doesn't mean you're not going to live more. In fact, the longer we live, the more different stories and journeys and challenges and obstacles we're going to face and overcome and get through. And so you, for me, that's one thing that helps pull me forward. It's because it makes me feel in control, right? Like if you're just at the mercy of the world and you're just kind of floating in the wind, I mean, who knows where you end up? And sometimes it could be amazing, right? But for me to have a little element of control over my situation is, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and this is the time frame I'm going to do it in. I've always functioned really well, I realize, with a time frame, right? So my sister's wedding, I'm walking, but I'm walking in my sister's wedding. That gives me 3 weeks, right, to get comfortable in these prosthetics and go. And then, you know, I set the goal to snowboard again that season. And so I think I made it. It was like the very end of the season. The season closes in April, and it was like the end of March that I did it because I said that I would. So yeah, having these goals and having a timestamp on them has always given me something to look forward to and has made it so that I don't look backwards, right? Because there's no time to, like there's something to work towards every single day to get where I want to be. And so yeah, I would definitely say I still operate that way.
And now for a quick break.
So most recently, you had a health setback. And is that something you're still getting yourself out of?
Yes. So this was huge. You know, as I said, the more life we live, the more stories we'll have. At one point, the biggest story of my life, the biggest journey of my life was losing my legs at 19. But then I went 20 years living my best life, traveling, snowboarding, you know, figuring out the possibilities, doing all the things I love to do on two prosthetic legs. And then all of a sudden, about 2 years ago, it was February of 2019, my world flipped upside down again when I had this cramp in my left calf. And I was actually doing a speech in Las Vegas. So at that time, I was traveling all over the world, snowboarding and speaking. I'd be in China speaking and Japan snowboarding and Asia or Europe speaking and coming back to the US and snowboarding. And, you know, it was like just back and forth and back and forth really for quite a few years I was doing that. And so I was in Vegas doing a speech and I felt this cramp in my left calf and I didn't think too much of it because obviously having prosthetic legs, you get used to a level of aches and pains. Things don't necessarily feel normal. But this pain continued on, and I actually had to fly to Nebraska and do a speech there as well. So I did the speech in Nebraska. I actually was on crutches. And I thought, well, maybe my prosthetic needs to be fixed. I didn't think it was me. I was thinking, oh, my prosthetic leg just doesn't fit right now. But the morning after the speech, I was in Nebraska. I woke up to excruciating pain in my leg. Ripped the sheets off, realized my leg was as white as the sheets I was laying in and didn't have blood. My leg was cold. I was terrified. I threw my legs kind of over the edge of the bed and just rubbed my leg like crazy trying to get blood flow. And I was Googling right away. It was like circulation issue. Oh gosh, I might have a blood clot. I travel all over the place. So I was thinking, okay, deep vein thrombosis, something like that. I looked up a picture and it did not look like that at all. So I'm like, gosh, I don't think that's what I have. And anyways, I made the quickest flight I could out of there to get to Denver. As soon as I landed, went straight to the emergency room. And that's where I was diagnosed with a massive blood clot from almost my hip down every artery of my left leg. So you have one arterial system down your left leg. It's kind of all connected. You have your femoral and your popliteal, and then it breaks off into arteries below the knee. Well, that entire system was a blood clot. And I knew that was bad. Like, there's many things in my life where I'm like, okay, this is bad, but it's going to be fine. This was, I think, the second time in my life, really, where I'm laying in the emergency room going, okay, this is really, really bad. This is really, really bad. Like, this isn't something you just get over, you know, in a day or two or a month or two. Like, this is a big deal. So I ended up having multiple surgeries to remove this. And where we think it came from, where we actually know it came from, my prosthetic had been pushing behind my knee for quite some time. And I thought that I was bruising my calf. Every time that my calf would hurt, I thought, oh, I got to get my prosthetic fixed. But really, I was bruising the artery and I was injuring the artery. And over time, that artery just gave up. And so here, the legs that have taken me so far in my life are now what just knocked me off of my feet. And so I have had about 10 surgeries over the last 2 years, all to save my leg, save the remainder of my leg, and a fight to walk again for the second time in my life. And it's a journey that I never could have imagined. You know, I was living my best life, really, before this happened. Like, I thought I figured it out again, right? Like, okay, fought back from meningitis, from losing my legs, to go on and live my dreams and goals and everything, to now all of a sudden having the rug pulled out from under me and literally start over from square one again. And so it has been really the most challenging journey of my life. And it's so interesting because, you know, as you get older, things do change. Some of the things that maybe helped me get through what I went through 20 years ago maybe aren't really that relevant now. You know, like, there's different things now that are helping me on my journey, helping me gain perspective, and helping me to move forward. And these are all things that, to be honest, you know, I hate to be this kind of, you know, toxic positivity person, but you can always find something good in every situation. And this has taught me so much more than I knew before about dealing with challenge on a day-to-day basis, about not just overcoming and healing and continuing on, but continuing on while you're facing challenge. You know, maybe there's a lot of people out there who won't overcome whatever it is they're facing. It's something they're living with the rest of their life. And this is my first real experience of having kind of a chronic challenge that I'm facing, but also still trying to show up as my best self in the world and how to do that. So it's been a huge journey. And actually, that's why I started my podcast, Bouncing Forward, is to share all the things I'm learning along the way and to help, you know, others be able to do the same.
Do you have bad moments, bad days? How do you get yourself out of those?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So I had a really bad week last week, probably one of the worst weeks I've had in my life. So I had a surgery about a month and a half ago, and I was this close to walking. So in January and February, my leg was actually 100%. It felt great. Everything was functioning really, really good. I just needed to get a prosthetic and walk. So that was, you know, I've been waiting 2 years for this. I was so excited for that. And suddenly, we saw that my femoral artery, which is that, it's your second largest artery in your body. So that's the artery that was injured initially, all of a sudden decided to close. It's like just 2 years later, it just decided it's going to collapse, close, and be done. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm getting ready to walk. And so we rush in, open it up, and it ends up collapsing the entire arterial system in my leg. And that's it. The surgeons are like, that's it. We can't do anymore. This is, you know, clearly this artery is so injured that it doesn't want to come back at all. And luckily, you know, here's another thing. You got to find the positive moments in every situation to get through sometimes. And one of the positive things that happened is the human body is miraculous. It is incredible. Like, what I've seen my body do over the last 2 years has truly been miraculous, because when this arterial system collapsed in my leg, all of a sudden, this thigh artery that you have one more artery in your leg, and it's a thigh artery that usually just feeds blood to your thigh, it just opened up three times its normal size and started branching off like roots from a tree, branches to go below the knee and feed my leg. So I didn't even realize that this had happened, that the whole arterial system collapsed, because all of a sudden this little artery decided to grow three times its normal size and take over. And so there's just these like beautiful moments in all of it where you go, oh my gosh, like the human body is made to survive. It is made to survive if you support it, right? If you take care of it. It gives me that much more just motivation to keep my body healthy because of what it does for me. And you know, if you fight for your health in your body, it will fight for you. When you can't, you know, you might be in a coma. I remember 20 years ago thinking, oh my gosh, I've been in a coma this whole time, yet my body fought for me and I survived. I had nothing to do with that. It was all my body. So it's so amazing to kind of be a part of this process. And like, my body has been through so much. I have scars from head to toe. I'm right now thinner than I've been. I have no muscle. I've had 10 surgeries this year. I've had anesthesia. My skin's dry. It's like everything is not how I would want it to be. Yet I have more appreciation for my body right now than I've ever had because of what it's done and what it's gotten me through.
And now for a quick break. Back to this week and why it was so horrible.
So what was so horrible this week is that knowing that this artery collapsed and the surgeons can't do anything to fix it, it really comes down to me now totally surrendering where I don't have control. It's not like, oh, go in for another surgery. It's like I have to surrender to what my body is going to do, and it's really up to my body if it's going to be enough to get me to walk again or not. And there's more major surgeries that could come down the road. If I don't have enough circulation in my leg, I could have more of my leg amputated. But of course, you know, that's something I'm trying to avoid, but it is an option, which options are good. I'm telling you, if you have an option, then you're in a good spot. But this week was so, I was so sad. I was just so sad that my body went through so much. I was so scared that I wouldn't walk again. There's now not something to look forward to pull me through, right? Like when it comes to like, okay, we'll do that surgery and see if that works. It's kind of like, I just at this week thought, God, I'm just kind of at the mercy of this. And I actually have been dealing with a level of pain that I've never had before. I've never dealt with chronic pain before. And I've got a level of that right now. And it makes it very hard to be inspired and motivated. It makes it very hard to focus on your future and dreams and goals and visions when you're constantly pulled back into your body because it hurts. And so it's given me a whole different perspective on what a lot of people go through. A lot of people deal with chronic pain, and this is kind of a little bit of it that I'm experiencing. So I had a week where I just was really, really down and realized I was actually dealing with a little bit of depression this week because I just felt like I don't have anything to get me through. So this is how I turned it around. I decided, okay, it can be so overwhelming when we think about these big dreams and goals. So I'm just going to break it back down to those little baby steps. And I thought of what's important in my life. And I wrote those things out kind of as pillars of my life. My relationship, that's with my husband, with my family, with my friends, that's important. Nutrition, that's important. Because that's what's going to keep my body strong and fighting for me, right? Fitness, that is hugely important. The only thing I can really do for my leg right now is work out and stay strong and kind of convince my body that it needs blood flow. So, and business, of course, that's important. How am I keeping, you know, my business going during all of this? So I wrote these pillars of my life down, almost like spokes to the wheel, right? Like you look at a wheel and you've got a spoke and that's your life. Like that's your core, most important.
It's funny, Amy. So I call it a pie. I have a book called The Pie Life, and it's all about how each slice of your life is important and you make goals for each slice. It's very similar to what you're saying.
I love that. I love that. And yeah, I don't know why this week I was visualizing spokes of a wheel kind of, right? Like, and if And if one of those spokes is gone, the wheel's going to wobble a bit, right? So these are like the five or six things that your absolute life's necessities to stay healthy and strong and whole and fulfilled and to live your best life, right? And so I started looking at those spokes and those pillars and realizing, you know, here I'm concerned about how am I going to snowboard again, or how am I going to, you know, live my best life again. But when I look at those pillars, I realized I was lacking in a lot of areas. You know, I'm like, gosh, my relationships, like, you know, my husband and I had this big argument. We've been through a lot of stress through all of this. Like, what does that need to be nurtured? And then I'm like, gosh, I haven't been eating the way I want to. What do I need to put there? And then I started thinking about fitness. I'm like, okay, this needs to be my absolute everyday priority. And it hasn't been. And so I decided I'm going to do two things in each of these little areas that are tangible, super easy. What's two things that I can do today to make change? And I thought, okay, fitness. Okay, I'm going to call a personal trainer, and the second thing that I can do right now is I'm going to get on the floor and do leg exercises. Okay, those are my two goals. Did those two. You know, for nutrition, I've been kind of eating what I want to get through all of this. And I'm like, okay, no more dairy starting today and more vegetables. It's like, I could start that today. And I did. And so I went through each one of those pillars and just thought of two very tangible, simple goals that I could do today to help me feel like I am getting, you know, back on track to being my best self. And I am telling you, it changed everything for me. I mean, within minutes, just by making the call to a trainer and getting on the floor and doing leg exercises. I mean, I've been doing physical therapy, but it's like I needed to take it to the next level, right? And so anyways, I just think, you know, the reason I was so not feeling good and having such a bad week is I was feeling out of control. I was feeling like I'm so far away from my best self. And I was also starting to think that I needed these outside things, like how, like, you know, I have all these outside goals and dreams. I'm like, okay, well, don't touch those yet. I need to take care of the inside things. I need to do the inside work. Then I can expand my business ideas and brand and all that stuff, right? And so anyways, I just feel that those two simple, tangible goals that you can begin right now that just inch you a little bit closer to where you want to be. Just that feels so good. And confidence builds on confidence. So if you do these little tiny things that make you just a little bit more confident, then you're like, okay, now I can do something a little bigger. And that makes you a little more confident. Eventually you get there.
It's so incredible because it's, first of all, everyone can relate to feeling so down and feeling like you've already given everything you have and why, and then you get into a place of why is this happening? And you have such an extreme version of that. But the fact that you're able to pull yourself out of it is so inspiring. I think for anyone who's facing challenges, whatever those challenges are, everyone has a challenge, whether you see it or not, right? Everyone has something.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I mean, we are all going to have a lot of somethings. And there may be some people that have maybe more visible challenges like me, but we are all going to go through grief and loss and sadness and confusion and uncertainty throughout our entire life. And knowing that it's not the end of the world, knowing that those are the things that actually help you grow as a person, and actually having little tools that help you get through, that's huge. Just to know you've got something in your toolbox to get through this situation, that's huge. And so that's, that's something that I'm really inspired by right now, not only because I'm in the thick of it and I'm living it, but, you know, through my podcast, Bouncing Forward, I'm trying to share the tips and tools to get through each one of these challenging moments, because I do believe that our challenges are oftentimes disguises for opportunity. And when I look back in my life, every big opportunity I've had was also the most challenging thing I've ever gone through. So whether it was trying to snowboard again, you know, I won 3 Paralympic medals. That's amazing. But it was the biggest challenge of my life, figuring out how to get there, right?
So that's where we're going to stop this episode with Amy Purdy. And we'll welcome her back next week to speak more about Dancing with the Stars, her Paralympic snowboarding career, and her Oprah connection.
Plus, we'll do the lightning round with Amy, and we'll have Lou Burns join us for the male perspective. Thanks for listening to What's Her Story with Sam and Amy.
We would so appreciate if you would leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, connect with us on social media at What's Her Story Podcast.
What's Her Story with Sam and Amy is powered by my company, The Riveter, at theriveter.co, and Sam's company, Park Place Payments, at parkplacepayments.com.
Thanks to our producer, Stacey Para, our social media manager, Phoebe Crane-Fuss, and our male perspective, Lou Burns.